thank you for leaving us with a smile. Professor Van Koller, please.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for this opportunity. I've never been to Ghana, so this is a privilege. And I've met wonderful people and I've heard wonderful papers. And many of the things that have been said also ties in nicely with my paper today. As you've heard, I mainly teach administrative law to final year LLB students. And I'm always amazed at how many of the administrative law principles actually are applicable to religious organizations. Religious autonomy, when dealing with how they operate, dismissals, disciplinary procedures, labor relations, and often the same issues and debates in the field of public law are equally relevant when dealing with the autonomy of religious institutions and fundamental rights such as the institutional right to freedom of religion and the right to freedom of association. Relevant is the applicability, interaction, and limitation of these rights, but also resolving the tension between private and public functions, profit, non-profit, and secular and religious. Now, the South African society, like you've heard, many African countries as well, exhibits a growing multicultural character which finds expression in the religious pluralism with much more diversity as in the past. It's becoming more and more important to recognize the need for religious diversity in a pluralistic society. Unfortunately, the South African courts has not fully come to terms with the fact that there's a fundamental difference between more private organizations, like religious institutions on the one hand, and voluntary associations like sports and professional bodies on the other hand. I think it's an intolerable situation if a religious institution is expected to jettison a doctrine or two in order to comply with broader social and political norms, whereas maybe it can be expected of an association like the rugby union or even a political party, which operate to a greater degree in the public sphere. The state's interference into the internal affairs of associations, religious or otherwise, will depend to a large extent on the nature of the organization, the impact that it has on the public and in the public sphere, the presence of a constitutional right that the organization promotes and protects, the size, purpose, selectivity, policies, and a variety of other characteristics may be pertinent in determining the extent of state regulation. The size, nature, and objectives of the organization will therefore determine the degree of autonomy enjoyed by the organization for purposes of the performance of its functions, complying with procedural requirements and formalities, limits of judicial review, and the degree of interference by the state in the internal affairs of the association. Maybe the more an association performs a public function, the more interference from the side of the government can be expected. And that is a rule that you also equally apply in administrative law, where the Constitutional Court has emphasized that it's not so much the functionally that is important, the fact that the president or a religious institution, but the function that they perform. Is it a religious function? Is it an executive function? An administrative function? And that might be quite relevant. This view has also been confirmed in stating that on general principles where a voluntary association fulfills a substantial public function in our society, it may appear indefensible that questions of construction concerning its constitution should be beyond judicial resolution. It's one thing to say that a small voluntary association with limited assets existing solely to serve the personal needs of members should be treated as beyond such supervision. It is quite another thing to say that a major national organization with substantial assets playing a central role in the determination of the affairs of the country should be so immune. The nature of the religious institution, together with the operation of South African Constitution, Article 15, 18, and 31, dealing with religious freedom, the right to associate in religious organizations, freedom of association, should limit state interference in the internal affairs of religious institutions and allow interference only in very exceptional cases. Religious institutions are afforded this privileged position for so long and to the extent that their activities are of a bona fide religious nature. Woolman and the Ball describe it as follows. The internal affairs of such associations are generally linked to some concrete vision of religious or community life. In a liberal society, the state should have no role to play in the construction of these particular visions of the good life. The opposite view, unfortunately, also applies. The more public goods distributed by an association, or the more public its function, the more likely it is to be subject to legitimate state intervention. When religious institutions are therefore pursuing purely economic or political objectives, state interference with membership policies, and perhaps even the internal affairs of the association may well pass constitutional muster. It has also been confirmed in several decisions that often the intensity of review depends on the subject matter in hand. However, the threshold for interference with certain kinds of associations ought to be quite high, as correctly pointed out, that with families, religious groups, and traditional communities, the first inclination of a liberal state ought to be to allow the members to work out their voice on their own. It also flows from the important premise that churches and religious associations are not just ordinary associations, they are, in fact, religious organizations. Therefore, it requires observance not only of the right to freedom of association, but also the right to freedom of religion. Despite the premise that religious organizations and churches are generous organizations based on an internal ecclesiastical law, they still function as private organizations in accordance with the rules and regulations laid down in their respective constitutions or church orders. Despite some arguments to the contrary, churches and religious organizations function in general as voluntary associations in civil society, either as churches and congregations in support and development of religious convictions and practices, or even as faith-based community or service organizations. Now that is then coming back to the argument that the more an association performs a public function, the more interference from the side of the government can be expected, whether that's advisable or not. It is generally accepted that not only an organized but also an active society is important for inclusive democracy and development. Various forms of community organizations exist, and the most important characteristic that they have in common is that they do not form part of the state. The emphasis is therefore not on commercial or profit organizations, but non-governmental or non-profit organizations that makes a contribution to the society at large. It's then within this category that we find churches and religious organizations. But the question is, what do we mean when referring to non-profit sector? Various forms, types, and definitions exist. Non-governmental organizations, voluntary organizations, faith-based organizations, non-profit organizations, and many more. Does it include religious political parties? Where a particular religious group or denomination decides to establish a church, or to run a religious hospital, or a religious school, or form a religious political party, would they enjoy the same degree of autonomy, or the same degree of religious autonomy? We find an interesting example in the Netherlands, where there was a religious political party that prohibited women from being members of the management committee of the political party. They were taken to the Commission on Equal Treatment by a women's activist group, claiming that it is discrimination. And obviously the commission was of the view that a religious political party is different from a normal religious organization, in the sense that the political party receives state funding, operating in the public sphere, they're more accountable to the public, and the view was that the political party is in fact unfairly discriminating against women, and they decided that they are allowed to take part in the election, but the state is going to revoke all party funding unless the political party changes their discriminatory practices. Obviously, it also creates a debate. On one side, those who are in favor of the fact that political parties, whether they're religious or not, perform public functions, and therefore it allows for state intervention. And then the other group that saw it as an unlawful interference with the religious freedom of the particular political party. We always say to our students in law that context is absolutely everything, and there's simply not a one-size-fits-all approach. So when we look at voluntary associations or types of organizations, we often fall back onto a couple of definitions. The legal definition. In straightforward terms, what does the law say? A non-profit organization is what the law of a specific country says it is. The economic or financial division. What is the source of income of the organization? The structural or operational definition. What is the basic structure of the organization? And then a very important one for purposes of this discussion. What is the functional definition? What is the purpose of the organization? What functions do they perform? And what activities are they engaged in? and obviously very important for purposes of religious autonomy. Faith-based organizations are often dependent on outside funding for survival, which places them in a little bit of a different category than maybe congregations. However, it doesn't mean that congregations are not involved in this type of service delivery. As it was pointed out, that congregations are amongst the most independent of all the organizations in the independent sector. They're also very active in service public in many ways, in addition to meeting the spiritual and practical needs of their members. Faith-based organizations are often non-profit organizations that are involved in some other form of service delivery, including religious education, charity, elderly care, health services, and missionary work. Its activities that would have been called to come primarily within the jurisdiction of the church rather than the state. Many of these organizations have religious objectives, either to provide religious education or to be involved in missionary work. Some of them are funded by churches or congregations to run religious schools or old age homes, and some have no religious objectives at all, but are inspired by religious values. Most of these organizations, especially in the field of social services, are fully dependent on the state for funding. And the question is that we find this necessary interaction and overlap of the public-private sphere with regard to religious organizations, and that necessarily also involves a debate of the secular and the religious sphere. This entanglement and the blurring of the distinction between private and public law relations was evident in the case of Forsey, the Minister of Safety and Security, and the dictum by Ackerman J, when it stated that it is both undesirable and unnecessary for purpose of the case to attempt to do which has seemingly eluded scholars in the past and given rise to wide difference of opinion among them, namely the drawing of a clear and permanent line between the domains of private law and public law and the utility of any such effort. Much of this interesting debate is concerned with an analysis of power relations in society, the shift which has taken place in the demarcation between private law and public law. Health functions traditionally associated with the state are increasingly exercised by institutions with tenures or no links with the state at all. These two spheres should be seen as partly interacting and not wholly disjointed. Governments, especially in Africa, seem to be more and more reliant on religious and civil society organizations to take over their social and welfare responsibilities, and this is often the result of bad service delivery, and expressed in the following terms: governments fail to provide education, substance abuse treatment, welfare, corrections. Governmental programs do not generate a sense of moral obligation that is essential to education and social services. When religious organizations do get involved, they run the risk of governmental control and interference that could jeopardize their religious identity and objectives. The more an organization is dependent on the state for funding, the more the risk to lose their independence and religion. And it's not only governmental control, but any form of outside interference that can undermine the character of religious organizations, schools, hospitals, and so forth, and therefore blurring the religious secular line can jeopardize religious autonomy. The South African Council of Churches is of the view that any voluntary association, including religious organizations, will qualify for public funds if they provide a service to the public or at least a section of the public. According to them, any association that admits any person who subscribes to and supports its aims and objectives can be classified as an open association and should therefore be entitled to public funding. If an organization's objectives are constitutionally permissible goals, they should be eligible to apply for funding, and then the state is precluded from denying funding to that body solely because it disapproves of its policies, practices, or activities. We find an example in relation to the Highlands House, an off-age home for the members of the Jewish community. The home is restricted to persons of the Jewish faith. The home is supported by contributions by members of the Jewish community, payments from residents, and a contribution from the state. This is not a direct contribution by the state, but in the form of subsidies. The chairperson of the council acknowledged that the exclusive Jewish restrictive admission policy was discriminatory against non-Jewish people. However, the argument was that the discrimination was not unfair, as the admission policy is designed to promote the continuity of the Jewish community and its adherence to the principles and precepts of the Jewish religion. The Human Rights Commission is of the view that a home for the aged, like Highlands Home, which are set up and maintained by the organization itself for purpose of providing for religious needs of those of the community and which does not discriminate on the basis of any irrational grounds or criteria may be constitutionally permissible. The Human Rights Commission highlights the importance of these hopes and other religious-based organizations. According to the South African Council of Churches, the allocation of state funding should depend on some of the following criteria. Does the association seek to achieve objectives that's directly or indirectly protected by the Constitution? The extent to which the organization seeks to improve the quality of life, the nature, the purpose, and the objectives of the organization, and so forth. Does state funding mean state interference in the affairs of the organization and a possible infringement of autonomy of these organizations? I think it must be noted that churches and religious organizations can cooperate with the state without compromising their religious identity. And in a constitutional democracy with guaranteed freedom of religion, there should be cooperation between the state and all religious community. It is, however, important that the state should not give preference to a particular religious belief, should refrain from interfering with the internal organization, and should respect the religious identity of these religious organizations. Section 4 of the South African Charter of Religious Rights and Freedoms specifically provide that persons of the same conviction have the right to associate with one another, to form, to join, and maintain religious and other associations, institutions, and denominations, organize religious meetings, and other collective activities. A preferred approach towards religious autonomy is an approach where religious autonomy does not apply absolute. It's an approach that is not too restrictive, prejudicing religious organizations by being considered to be neutral. It must be an approach that is accommodating enough to provide religious organizations with autonomy with regards to internal matters, a clear religious nature, but can even include activities of a less religious nature. It must be borne in mind that courts are hardly in a position to determine which religious views and traditions are central to a particular religious group or belief. To conclude, based on the doctrine of non-entanglement into doctrinal issues as applied in South Africa, the state is prohibited from interfering with religious organizations and churches' autonomous sphere. Religious organizations enjoy a sphere of autonomy with regard to religious doctrine and action and even procedures flowing from it. Section 7.2 of the South African Constitution emphasizes the fact that the state must not only fulfill the rights in the Bill of Rights, but must also protect and promote these rights. Religious autonomy requires the state not to merely tolerate religion, but to embrace religion, creating and not limiting the space for religion, imposing a positive and not a negative or even a neutral duty on the state, and a duty to not only respect, but also to promote and protect religion and religious rights.